Thousands of years have gone by since Adam and Eve's first sin, when God gave them a promise of a Savior who would win. Words from the Baby King, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas arch book. The Baby King would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 5 through 9. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Baby King.
When I found you, I saw raw, untamed power. And beyond that, something truly special.
Has always been there. But now it's awake. And I need help.
I've seen this raw strength only once before. It didn't scare me enough then. It does now. Kill it. If you have to. That's the only way to become what you were meant to be.
That's the trailer for the latest Star Wars movie, Star Wars The Last Jedi. It is a movie that, well, made a lot of money, still is making a lot of money, but not as much as the last one. It's off by, well, almost 20% after the first day. So people are reacting to it by saying best ever, didn't really care for it, all the way down to worst ever, they should stop making the movies right now. Why is that? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 21st of December. For the first hour of the program, we're going to be reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese will be our guest. A little bit later, Cheryl Magnus will join us from The Federalist to talk about outrage over sexual misconduct. She'll explain why, as a conservative Christian woman, she isn't jumping up and down with glee every time a liberal icon in Hollywood of politics falls to the sexual harassment hysterics. And then Pastor Hans Feeney joins us to talk about Hallmark Christmas movies. If you go to my DVR, you will find a lot of them in there. They're not for me. They're for my wife. Why do people like them so much? And what do they say about the holiday? You can join us for the next 2 hours with your questions or your comments, especially as we review the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi with Pastor Ted Geese. Our call-in number 1-877-623-MYIE. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, or a tweet at issuesetc. Go to our Facebook fan page to leave your thoughts and comments on The Last Jedi as well. We've left space for you to do so, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to review the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi, Pastor Ted Geese, a regular guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd.
Why do you think that this one in particular is getting the kind of across the spectrum, sometimes swinging wildly between never make another Star Wars movie or the best one yet? Why do you think this one's getting that kind of reaction from its massive audience?
I think that it's because many of the viewers of these movies are extraordinarily passionate about the movies themselves. So that passion will, you know, color what they're looking at when they sit down in the movie theater. And of course, with platforms like Facebook and Twitter, people are able to get their opinions out there. So, you know, where in the past people might just go see a movie, not care for it very much, and then go on with their lives, I think that along the way, many people have spent many hours thinking about these movies, watching, rewatching, watching them over again, kind of having it all sink in to the point that they have a kind of an internal barometer about what they think Star Wars should be. And when it doesn't quite hit where they think it should be, then they're going to express their passion about it. And I think this is what we're finding in spades right now with this film.
I remember, let's talk a little bit about the nostalgia factor. I remember about a year before the first one came out, I was a young child, just looking through Time magazine and seeing a very tiny picture of C-3PO and R2-D2. It was right at the very beginning of the magazine. It was just one of those things that here's a movie that's coming out, and it's got this director who's the hot thing in Hollywood, and he's making this science fiction movie. And I determined in my little, I guess I had to be 10 or 11, I don't know, in my little mind, I'm going to see this movie. And I did the first day, and was a fan ever since. Not so much as the years have gone by. How much does that nostalgia keep the franchise chugging along?
I think it's huge. I mean, and that's what Disney is banking on. They bought the whole franchise for like $1 billion or something from George Lucas, and their whole empire is built on nostalgia. They even like create nostalgia by making things disappear for a while. They talk about putting things in the vault, and then they wait and wait and wait, and then when people are hungry for it, they bring it back out. So, you know, like their whole empire, their whole magic kingdom is built on it. So that nostalgia factor is huge, because right now families, it's intergenerational viewing, like grandparents, parents, grandkids, even great grandkids in some cases are bringing are coming to the theater to watch the film, right? So that kind of built-in audience is huge for a company who wants to make money. Like that way you can just, you're not targeting just one little group. I remember being a little kid. This was the very first, the original Star Wars film, the one that they call New Hope now, A New Hope. That was the first movie I watched ever. Like I was in a movie theater and sat down and watched it. That was the first one. So it's been a big nostalgic fan favorite franchise of mine through my life. And it's interesting you talked about C-3PO and R2-D2. A movie that happened kind of not too long ago, actually one we reviewed called Interstellar, had these robots in them that were just kind of like a obelisk, and then all of a sudden they would kind of flip around and move and do things. That was the first time since when I was a kid seeing R2-D2 and C-3PO when I thought to myself, I'd like to have one of those robots. So, you know, like it takes a lot to shake that nostalgia. If something's like baked into a person and it's what they love, you know, that's what you're getting in these Star Wars films, is so many people have a real soft spot in their heart, a tender spot for these films.
If I'm not one of those people, if maybe I saw the first couple and I didn't see what all the hoop to do is about, and I lost interest, and I go back to this one for the holiday season, am I going to know at all what's going on?
If you've missed a couple movies along the way, you might have a hard time. I remember when I was a young kid and I went and saw Return of the Jedi. I think the first time I went to see Return of the Jedi, my grandfather took me to see it. Like, he took us to see it, and he had never seen any Star Wars movies, so he didn't see the first two. He didn't know what the heck was going on. You know, like, I think that if you wandered into this film, you wouldn't... I don't... Like, as a film itself, it relies on you knowing some things. I don't think that it's a perfect standalone film where somebody who doesn't know anything could just come in and sit down and watch it. Near the very beginning, they play on you knowing that the character of Kylo Ren, played by Adam Driver, is the son of Princess Leia Organa, played by Carrie Fisher. They play on that, on you knowing that that's the case, in kind of a little dramatic moment. But there's nothing to tell you that. So if you just sat down in this film and didn't know anything about Star Wars, didn't know anything about the previous film or anything about what had gone on before, you wouldn't really know what was going on probably for most of the film.
Another thing that any of the films may have been criticized for is kind of recycling certain little tropes that these movies, they didn't invent them. I mean, George Lucas has freely admitted that he stole everything from older movies to make the original ones. But But little tropes that have become so strongly associated with these movies, and they recycle them too much. Does this film suffer from that?
It does have that kind of stuff in it. And like sometimes that stuff is, you know, referred to as fan service. Sometimes it's referred to as a callback to previous films. Sometimes they, you know, can be seen even as tropes. And sometimes like Star Wars has its own kind of things like that. In fact, like almost every single Star Wars movie has the line in it, you know, where the character walks into a room or into some sort of situation and says, I have a bad feeling about this. So it happens in every single film. This one, it doesn't seem to happen, but apparently the little droid who talks in droid language, BB-8, does a whistle and a beep or whatever, and he's supposed to be the one saying, I've got a bad feeling about this. So like that's a Star Wars specific trope. Some people had a big problem with The Force Awakens, the previous one by J.J. Abrams that came out in 2015, which we also reviewed, because they said it was too much like Star Wars A New Hope, right down to Star Killer Base, which was like the Death Star. And actually, I remember the other day, like we're Facebook friends, you and I, and you had this great picture of like just piles and piles of Death Stars. And you said, like, this is the opening scene of the new Star Wars movie, because everybody was like so up in arms about not spoiling anything for anybody. And it's kind of funny how these things play out. This film is not one where it's its own movie. It doesn't so rely on these kinds of things. And in fact, this may be its own problem, in that the very people who wanted something new now are going to get something new, have received something new, and maybe they're like, well, I don't really like this new thing that I'm getting.
So are we going to, if someone has not seen this film, by the end of this conversation, will we have spoiled the whole thing for them in terms of what they are waiting to see? Are we going to do a lot of spoilers?
It depends on how, what kind of questions you ask. I don't know. We talk for a significant enough length of time, we probably are going to hit something. I think people should be pretty careful. Like the review that I wrote, I tried pretty hard not to have any major plot points being spoiled in it. If you've seen the movie and you read the review, you can see the little things that I'm pointing at. But I think that we probably actually are going to have to dig into a couple of things in order to talk about them. Did you see the movie yet?
I have not seen the movie, but you can spoil it for me because I've read all the spoiler reviews.
Oh, so, you've dived in there.
I'm a grown-up. I know. I don't mind knowing what's going to happen before I go into the theater.
I kind of had a personal embargo on it because I want to go in fresh, because I don't want to be colored by other people's reviews before I write one. And I was kind of hoping to just have that, like, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. And sure enough, you know, it didn't go the way I expected. And in fact, that's a line from one of the trailers, and it's in the film too. Luke Skywalker says, this is not going to go the way you think. And that's pretty much how the movie was. You know, this wasn't what I had expected. So it's, yeah, well, I think that along the way, if you're okay with spoiling some things, and people out there listening will have to make the judgment call for themselves right now, if they want to keep listening or come back and listen again later. You know, as an on-demand listener, you know, you might be okay because you might come to this a little later. But
so there's our spoiler alert. Some things will either intentionally or unintentionally be spoiled for the movie. So if you want to wait, come back and listen to this after you've seen the film. With that said, it spoils nothing for anybody to say where this movie picks up, right where the other one left off. Where did the other one, the last one, The Force Awakens, leave off?
It left off with the character of Rey, who was the protagonist of the last film, like a kind of a garbage collector on a planet that got spare parts for money for food on this planet called Jakku. She is force sensitive. So she seems to have the force or whatever. And she's figured out or found her, she has the map that gets her to Luke Skywalker, the Jedi Master. And she's arrived on this planet of Akto. And she's handing him his lightsaber, the very lightsaber that he was fighting Darth Vader with in Empire Strikes Back, when Darth Vader cut his hand off and the Luke Skywalker's hand and the lightsaber fell down into this big abyss in Besmid, on Bespin. So, you know, like this is a very unusual object. It's something that he hasn't seen for decades. And she's handing it to him, and it's kind of like here's your sword, here's your lightsaber, let's go, it's time for you to jump into the fight. And that's where the last film ended. And many Star Wars movies seem to have like a little patch in between. So when the crawl comes up, it tells you what's been going on in the meantime. The crawl that comes up with just the text at the beginning of this film just tells you what happened in the last film, pretty much, because this film picks up immediately after the last one. So there's a bit of a space battle, and then bam, you're on the island on that little planet with Luke Skywalker and Rey, and that's where it picks up.
When we come back, we'll continue our review of the movie Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio. Sacred music for the Christmas season. Coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Your lifeline to the Lutheran worldview. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the language of medicine and law today. Visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Since 2008, Issues Etc. has been operating independently as a production of Lutheran Public Radio Incorporated. Please help us finish in the black for the 10th consecutive year by making a year-end tax-deductible contribution. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We have warned our listeners about spoilers that are to come in the next 45 minutes. So let's talk about something that is central to this film and to all the films. But you say this one, it's central in a different way, and that is the Force. What in this film is explained about it, or what do we learn about it that drives the plot of this film forward?
Yeah, you know, along the way, it was much more mysterious in the first three films. It was being doled out a little bit at a time each film. When I say the first three films, for me, I'm meaning, A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. And when the prequels came out that George Lucas was also involved in, they introduced, or more refined, you know, they brought in a deeper concept of the balance of the Force. So there's a light side and there's a dark side of the Force. And the Force is this energy field that binds everything together. You know, Obi-Wan Kenobi is very, waxes very eloquently about that. in the first film, and it permeates all things, it holds all things, it's the glue that binds the universe together, essentially. And Jedis can tap into this, into the Force. What they brought out in the prequel films, 1, 2, and 3, Phantom Menace, The Clone Wars, and Revenge of the Sith, was a sharper image of this, the Force being the balance of the Force was a big deal. And there's a prophecy that there was someone who was coming who was going to restore balance to the Force. And of course, this was Darth Vader, but then he went evil. He started out as Anakin Skywalker, the father of Luke Skywalker. And you have this kind of redemption arc for him. And by the time you get to Return of the Jedi, he's redeemed. And you see his shimmery Force ghost, because they have Force ghosts also, by the end of the third film. So again, this idea of the balance of the Force is kind of coming more and more out in this particular film. So in this film, it kind of doubles down on this kind of yin-yang, Taoist kind of Eastern philosophical / religious viewpoint of the Force. And you seem to get in The Force Awakens and now in this film, this notion that the Force is not just like an energy field, but actually has agency, that it is in and of itself has some sort of desire to have things the way that it wants it to have it. And the way that it seems to want to have it is this perfect stasis, this balance between the light side and the dark side. And they very clearly put together that the dark side of the Force is connected with death and the light side of the Force is connected to life. So this is what you're getting spelled out in more detail in this film than they have had in any of the other previous films. And Rian Johnson, who made the film, he was pretty much just given a clean slate. I listened to an interview with him just the other day, and he said that he wasn't given notes about where the story was going. It was just a complete blank slate. He could just write what he wanted. And he's been a big Star Wars fan his whole life. He's about 42 years old or something like that. So, you know, he could just kind of delve into it the way he wanted. And this is the way that it comes out. And in fact, I looked pretty close, but like on this kind of sacred island, on this sacred planet for the Jedi where Luke is hiding out, it's the original Jedi planet. There's a cave, and in the cave, there's this shallow pool. In the bottom of the shallow pool, it's kind of round. It looks like a yin-yang kind of styled symbol. Not exactly, but similar to that. So it's kind of in the DNA. It seems to be in the DNA of the film itself.
And just for the sake of kind of closing a plot hole that was opened by one of the previous films with respect to the Force, is there any mention of the midichlorians?
The midichlorians, this kind of uber scientific, quote-unquote scientific kind of approach to the idea of the Force that comes up in the prequel films. Luke Skywalker doesn't talk about the midichlorians. There is this moment where he's teaching a lesson to Rey about the Force, and they kind of have this visual representation of like plants like sprouting and like things dying, and they kind of take it in this direction where it is intimately connected to life and death and everything that's going on in the universe, but they don't talk about how exactly that happens. Like they're not talking about these kind of like little cells or whatever a midichlorian is. They don't talk about that at all in the course of this film.
So speaking of the kind of the balance there, you say that the closer this balance comes in this film, the more the agents of the Force kind of, the blurrier the line gets between dark and light. How is that?
Yeah, it's kind of this, it's almost like it's all on a spectrum, right? So this is what I noticed where I thought about, like there's a moment in the film where Luke is kind of taken aback that Rey is like tempted by, like what he would say would be tempted by the dark side of the Force, but instead of resisting it, she just kind of like goes to it and wants to hear what it has to say, kind of a deal. And he that bothers him, like, because he has spent like his whole Jedi existence trying to resist the temptation to go to the dark side, and he was literally being asked to go to the dark side by his father and the Emperor and these other people in previous films. So you have this, and of course you've got like Kylo Ren, who's clearly on the dark side of the Force, and the hope is that he maybe could be flipped to come over to the light side of the Force. And when you have these two characters of Rey and Kylo Ren, they're connected together, and there's even this thing that happens in the film where they're across the galaxy able to see each other and talk to each other and communicate with each other. And they seem to be like closer and closer to each other. It's very porous. It's not as clear that one is good and one is bad. They're just two people kind of in the mix together in a way. And in fact, there's a point at which in the film, Kylo Ren even has like a hero moment, a moment that you would almost categorize as a heroic good moment, which is kind of an unusual thing. And it doesn't play out like Darth Vader has his heroic good moment at the end of Return of the Jedi, but that's like his last moment. Like, he doesn't have much after that. He has a soliloquy that he, you know, has a chance to kind of have a confession and absolution with his son, you know, as he's dying. But that's kind of like that's the end for Darth Vader. In this, Kylo Ren has a kind of heroic moment, but it's not the end for Kylo Ren. He'll be in the next film. So, you know, like, this is where that kind of line between the good side of the Force, like the light side of the Force and the dark side of the Force, seems to be blurred.
The other thing about the Kylo Ren character that came out in The Force Awakens that I kind of liked, even though a lot of people have not really warmed up to him as a character, is how this isn't... He's conflicted about a lot of things. He's a bad guy. There's no doubt about it. A petulant child in a lot of ways. But he kind of shows that there are misgivings even in someone who's dedicated his life to the dark side of the Force.
Yeah, he's at one point, his master, Supreme Leader Snoke, says to him, you know, you're just a boy in a mask. You know, like, he's to kind of like get in under his skin. So he is this petulant kid. And again, this film kind of like maybe gives you a hint as to how that might have occurred in him, like why he went the way he went. But at the same time, it also says that the Force itself was at work in him, tapping into that quote unquote dark side of the Force, etc. So yeah, he is an interesting character. And I think that he's probably one of the more compelling things about the film. Like, him and Rey, those two characters are compelling characters. What they do with them is interesting. That's probably one of the better parts of the film. The other thing that's going on in this is that it's kind of one of those, you know, you shouldn't meet your heroes kind of thing, because the way that they deal with the character of Luke Skywalker, he's supposed to be this big legendary character. And when Rey meets him, he's been kind of sequestered alone, fairly alone. There's some people around, I guess, some things around on the island, but kind of by himself on this island for many, many, many years. And he's got like a very low opinion of himself. You know, like he even when he's talking to Rey, is like, and there's all of a sudden there's Luke Skywalker, and he's the hero. He's the big legendary character, you know, but it's all, you know, baloney, basically, is what he's saying. You know, he's still just him.
Again, another spoiler alert. I hear that Yoda returns in some form.
Yes, Yoda does return. And the interesting thing about Yoda returning is that they found the actual, back in the archives or whatever, they found the actual Yoda puppet, the molds for the original Yoda puppet. So they made a brand new one. So it's not a CGI effect. So this is something that Rian Johnson was talking about in a interview he did with the director's cut, where, you know, one director interviews another director. And he was talking about how they found the original Yoda mold and they made that. So it's an actual physical puppet that's used in the film. And then Frank Oz, who does the voice of Yoda, came back to do the voice again. And Frank Oz is also kind of popular, or he did a lot of work with the Muppets. So some people have said that the Yoda in this movie is a little more Muppety sounding, but I mean, that's natural because he himself did Muppets. Like, that's one of the things that Frank Oz did. So it is an actual real practical effect that you have in the film. I think the CGI they did is just for some of the glow on Yoda, but he's there. And I think the reason why you brought it up is because he's not quite what we would have expected. And again, this gets down to one of these kind of major themes that's going on in the film. So one of the major themes that's going on in the film is this idea that the way forward is through the death of the past, that you just need to destroy the past and then you can move forward. But it's one of the ideas that is like permeating the film all the way through. And in it, like, okay, this is very spoilery. So I know we've had our warnings, but we're warning again. There's a moment where they have established already by this point in the movie that the Jedi have sacred texts. So they have like scripture. They've got these little books. They're on this island. They're in this little, inside this kind of like cave inside a tree. And, you know, here's Yoda who shows up, ancient Jedi master. And he refers to them. He says that page turners, they are not. And then he stops Luke from burning the tree down with the books in it. But he himself, like using the Force, brings lightning and just like burns the whole thing to the ground. So it's very unusual to have somebody who should be like a quote unquote hero in the faith, just taking the faith and just like garbaging it. Like the whole Jedi religion, all of it, the Jedi order, the whole nine yards, just like, whoosh, there it goes. So for some people, that's going to be very challenging. What it does is it opens up the possibility for Rey and Kylo Ren to like abandon the Sith, abandon the Jedi, and just make it up along the way as they go. And this is very much like when I'm thinking about this, reflecting on it, watching it and thinking about it afterwards, this is very much like the spiritual but not religious kind of way that some people view their spiritual life, as it were, that the religion part's not the important part. The sacred text is not the important part. Like the history and the past is not the important part.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. We're reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Last Jedi. When we come back, we'll kind of walk through some of the other points of the plot and determine as well as we can how it ends. Apparently, it doesn't leave a very satisfying end if what you were looking for was that. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thousands of years have gone by since Adam and Eve's first sin, when God gave them a promise of a Savior who would win. Words from the Baby King, Concordia Publishing House's new Christmas arch book. The Baby King would make a great Christmas gift for children, grandchildren, and godchildren ages 5 through 9. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for December, The Baby King.
Answering objections defending the faith, evolution or creation, transgenderism and homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Learn more at worldviewsa.org. This conference features Issues Etc. guests Dr. Jan Lohmeyer and Pastor David J. Weber. The San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Saturday, February the 3rd, worldviewsa.org.
Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During December, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to our Ministry of the Month, Ministry Focus. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU, good for you, good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Recently graduated from high school or college and looking for a chance to serve a community in need while sharing the good news of Jesus Christ? Lutheran Young Adult Corps may be for you. Lutheran Young Adult Corps provides opportunities for long-term, full-time service for 10 weeks through the summer or 10 months over the school year in places like St. Louis, Philadelphia, and Boston. Find out more about Lutheran Young Adult Corps by finding us online at lcms.org/YACORPS or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Lutheran YA Corps.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I think every man, every Christian should consider, at least, the possibility of God calling him into the holy ministry.
Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Carl Fekencher of Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Because that's the way that God has designed for faith in Christ Jesus to be spread, for the gift of eternal life that Christ Jesus earned by his death and resurrection to be shared with people, by the washing of baptism for infants and for adults, for the instruction, the proclamation of the word that happens on a nonstop basis in God's kingdom. God uses people, he uses men to be those proclaimers, to be those men who share the sacraments.
If you've ever considered becoming a pastor, contact Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Their phone number, 1-800-481-2155, 1-800-481-2155, or visit ctsfw.edu. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. We want your thoughts on Star Wars, The Last Jedi, live this Thursday afternoon, the 21st of December. Our call-in number, 1-877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or your questions and comments at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. I have read some who talk about the, not so much the ending of this movie, but kind of the way the movie ends, as obviously setting up for the next piece of the franchise and therefore not being that satisfying. What are they talking about there?
Well, you know, like, it's the second movie in a three-part trilogy, right? So, you know, that often can be the case. Like, you want to have, maybe if you could, like, a really dramatic cliffhanger. They get away to fight another day. They slip through the fingers of the First Order, the Empire's new version of itself that exists now in this Star Wars universe. But I guess one of the things that's like could be dissatisfying to people is that, again, this is a big spoilery thing, but it very much appears, and it's pretty clear that Luke Skywalker dies. And the question is, did that have to happen? So if you think about kind of like the trajectory of all of these new films, like each of these new films, Han Solo dies in the first one, Luke Skywalker dies in the second one. The plan probably would have been for Princess Leia to die in the third one, but Carrie Fisher died in real life and won't be available to shoot for the third movie. So I don't know if that's going to change J.J. Abrams' plans for what he's going to do with the last, the ninth film in this series of three trilogies. But that may not have been satisfying to some people. There are some other things just in general about how the plot of the film goes that some people weren't satisfied with. That just in a nutshell, what you get is the resistance is escaping. The First Order has found them. They're escaping and their numbers are dwindling. And it's this kind of like slow motion chase. Like everything's supposed to take place within a 16-hour stretch. And they're just a little more maneuverable, a little faster, and they just kind of like stayed just ahead of the First Order's big lumbering ships. And as that's happening, they're trying to figure out a way to escape, to evade them. But there's a plot point where they're being tracked through light speed, so they can't just like keep going through hyperspace over and over again, because the First Order will just be behind them everywhere they go. So that's kind of what's going on in the plot of the film. They managed to squeak out the end of it, but really the resistance, the new rebellion, is left at enough people that could fit onto the Millennium Falcon. That's not very many people to start a resistance against the First Order and all of their, you know, imperial machinery, as it were.
One other question. This is just personal curiosity. Before we go to some of our listeners' comments and thoughts, the big speculation, the big question going into this film was, who is Snoke? Do we find out who Snoke is?
Nope. There's no answer to who Snoke is. Nope, 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 nope to Snoke. You don't get nothing. Nothing at all. Zero. And you pretty much still don't know who Rey's parents are either. There's a suggestion that's given, like, that says that they're just nobodies. It's not important. She came from nothing. They were just miserable folks that sold her off for money so that they could, you know, drink or something. Is that true? I guess J.J. Abrams will tell us in the next film.
Let's start with Sonia, who says, I thought the Rose character was pointless and took away from the movie. Did you catch the original three? I'm a Star Wars fan. I always have been since I saw the originals in theaters in the late 70s. This movie disappointed me. It has tied Attack of the Clones as my least favorite of the films, but I will always be a fan, she says. What are your thoughts there, Pastor Geese?
Yeah, the character of Rose is played by Kelly Marie Tran, and she's a fellow resistance fighter, and her and the character of Finn go on this side trip to try to find a code breaker to sneak onto the ship, the First Order ship that's tracking the resistance ships. And if they could just turn that tracker off, then they could slip away and without being noticed. Like, they wouldn't be able to continue to track them through hyperspace, as it were. And the interesting thing about, like, the idea that the character is pointless is that it boils down to that plot line is a failed plot line. It's heroes trying to do something that fails. So it's a frustrated plot line. They don't get to do the thing that they thought they were going to do. They don't save the day. They just fail, and people die because of the failure. And actually, when they slip away to go to this planet to like find the codebreaker, a lot of that stuff for some viewers is kind of irritating stuff. Like, it seems like too much social commentary and not enough, you know, swashbuckling adventure that they might be looking for in Star Wars. So the character of Rose could be seen as a failure for some people. I think that she's also a character that sets up another one of the main themes that's in the film. She has a line that kind of is a thesis statement that comes near the end of the film. And she's the one that says that the way that they're going to win, the resistance, that is not by fighting the things that they hate, but by saving what they love. So that's she's the one that says, it's something very close to that as a paraphrase, but that's essentially what she says as a character.
Michael listens in Springfield, Missouri. He says, what's the point of the Dark Force at the Jedi training sites at Dagobah and Octo? That's his first question.
I guess it's like a point of testing. Like, you have like your good guy, you know, and you send them in to like a simulator, almost like this patch of darkness, to like, you know, in a quote unquote controlled environment with his Jedi master right there, to see what he would do if presented with this evil force. What I'd really hoped for in this film is, like, near the end of The Force Awakens, Snoke says to Hux, you know, go collect Kylo Ren. He must finish his training. So I kind of thought that what we were going to get in this film was Rey getting trained by, you know, Luke Skywalker, and Kylo Ren receiving the rest of his training from Snoke. And then, of course, it would make more sense if the dark side training if there was a spot, the same kind of thing where, but over there, it's like a light side of the force spot. And they have to go into that to see if they would, what they would do in that controlled environment. That would make sense to me, but that's not what we ended up getting.
He also asks, how does Rey's experience with the dark side prepare her for trying to convert Kylo Ren back?
I don't know. Like her, it's kind of nebulous. Like her experience with the dark side, it's just, you know, it's just Luke saying, oh, you're really powerful. And it didn't scare me before, but it should scare me now. And then just her dealing with her folks. And again, this is where that blurred line between the dark side and the light side kind of comes in, and where they're so close to each other that they start to look the same. I guess there's the moment where Rey and Kylo Ren finally get, like, they're together and they end up fighting side by side. So I guess that's the thing, is that they together as a pair fight not against each other, but with each other. And probably her dark side stuff allowed that to happen. But then, of course, just like Luke Skywalker said, you know, this isn't going to go the way you think.
We're reviewing the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. When we come back, Christopher has a question. Is The Last Jedi a film that is faithful to the Lucas production films, the Lucas produced films, particularly episodes 4 through 6? Or is it more of a fan film in how it tries to continue the saga? When we come back, more of our review of The Last Jedi.
This is a strategic retreat. It's not leaving the battlefield completely, but it's going to where we can rebuild ourselves for the long war ahead. It's a retreat no more than the British Army retreated at Dunkirk.
Rod Dreher speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And the England I speak of, the metaphorical England, are our churches and our communities, which are not completely safe any more than England was safe. Thank God for the Royal Air Force. But it's relative safety. It's where we can do the hard work we need to do, not only to survive the current moment and the current crisis, but to prepare to take the battle to the enemy when the opportunities present itself.
You can listen to Rod Dreher's presentation, Making the Case for the Benedict Option, on an audio DVD of the 2017 Making the Case Conferences. We'll send it to you for a year-end tax-deductible contribution of $300. Just click the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This year, keep Christ at the center of your holiday reading list with the Lutheran Witness magazine. Enjoy articles on the Virgin Mary, family Advent activities, candlelight services, and more. The December issue even includes a special Christmas gift guide for Lutherans. Visit cph.org/witness to start or renew your subscription, or to purchase a gift subscription for a loved one this Christmas. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Have you ever wanted to better understand philosophy and its impact on your family, your church, or your world, but didn't know where to begin? Concordia University, Wisconsin has an innovative, free online course for you entitled Philosophy Kata Christan. These 6 engaging video sessions are taught by noted Lutheran philosopher, lecturer, author, and pastor, Dr. Gregory Scholes. Learn more by clicking the Kata Christan logo at issuesetc.org. issuesetc.org. We are reviewing the film Star Wars The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. If you've enjoyed our movie reviews with Pastor Ted Geese this year, please consider making a year-end tax-deductible contribution to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. With 10 days left in the year, we are approximately $44,000 short of projected expenses. You can make a secure online contribution at issuesetc.org, or you can donate by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for thinking of Issues Etc. at the end of 2017. Christopher in Springs, Texas says, I have not seen the film, so I'll ask what I hope is a non-spoiler question. Is The Last Jedi a film that is faithful to the Lucas-produced films, particularly episodes 4 through 6? Or is it more of a fan film in how it tries to continue the saga?
You know, I think this is a really great question. I do think, or I feel like J.J. Abrams and Rian Johnson are fans. They are filmmakers, but they are fans of Star Wars. So in a way, like when they sit down to write these films, they are fans writing these films. Lawrence Kasdan, who was a writer on the original films, particularly he started with Empire Strikes Back. He was one of the writers along with J.J. Abrams on the new Star Wars film, The Force Awakens. But in this film, he's not listed as a writer. Rian Johnson is just the writer by himself on this. So this is very much is a film that's a fan film. And I almost feel like they need somebody to come in who maybe isn't a fan to look at all of the canon of everything that they have and come up with a good story.
Benjamin asked this, and we can squeeze it in here before we take our next break. He says, I think what the fans truly wanted was that things from the novels be incorporated into the new films, but when Disney bought them, they scrapped all of that. Are the novels the canon? What is the canon, and what role did the novels play?
This is a really interesting thing. We could even spend a whole day talking about this too, is that this idea of canon, like things that are like canonically part of Star Wars and things that are like have now been deemed to be pseudepigraphically part of Star Wars or a part of like an apocrypha or something, like things that are not actually canon. There were a lot of Star Wars books that were written, some of the beloved ones like by Timothy Zahn. They've kind of cherry-picked a little bits and pieces out that they like. So at this point, the films are canon. I think there's some of the animated TV programs that they've done, Star Wars Rebels, the Clone Wars, those ones are canon, but a lot of other stuff are just, they're not canon at all. So there are characters that people really loved from the books. Like there's a character named Mara Jade who is like kind of a love interest for Luke Skywalker. She's in the books, but she's not in any of the films, and then doesn't become part of the canon at this point. And that was just a decision that was made by Disney because they wanted to have not be shackled down to all of this extra stuff that had been written, to have that clean slate so that they could go out and just strike forward and do what they wanted to do.
Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He's with us for a few minutes on the other side of the break. We're reviewing the movie Star Wars, The Last Jedi, live this Thursday afternoon, December the 21st. You can join us with your questions or comments. We have a few more listener questions on the other side of the break, and we'll talk about the worldview that is embedded now into the Star Wars story. 1-877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email with your questions or your comments. Talkback@issuesetc.org. Talkback@issuesetc.org. You can also send us a tweet with a question, comment, or a thought on Star Wars The Last Jedi. Our Twitter address @issuesetc. And we've left space at our Facebook fan page for you to register your thoughts there as well. Facebook.com/issuesetc. Facebook.com/issuesetc. More of our review on the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi with Pastor Ted Geese. Then we'll be talking about outrage over sexual misconduct with Cheryl Magnus and Hallmark Christmas movies with Pastor Hans Feeney. Stay tuned.
education, and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Your children are God's good gift to you. That's why St. Paul Lutheran School in Hamel, Illinois, is committed to providing pre-K to 8 education founded in Jesus Christ. St. Paul is the only classical Lutheran school in the St. Louis area. Matins and math, Latin and logic, orchestra and oration, catechesis and capture the flag are among the good gifts St. Paul would love to help you give your children. Learn more at school.stpaulhamel.org.
This Christmas, bring your family and friends to experience a reenactment of the Christmas story and Journey to the Manger, an interactive Christmas experience.
Enjoy a live nativity, warm drinks and cookies, and live music performed by student groups.
From 5 to 8 p.m. on December 22nd, come to Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, to enjoy this Christmas experience for all ages.
Admission is free, and when you donate $25 or more, you'll receive a custom piece of art made by our students.
For more information,
call 618-656-0044.
Merry Christmas!
Welcome back to Issues Etc. On this Thursday afternoon, we are reviewing the movie Star Wars The Last Jedi. Pastor Ted Geese is our guest. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, back to some of the questions from our listeners. This one comes from Brad. He says, what did you make of Rian Johnson's treatment of the dark side and the inherent emptiness of the Jedi religion during the Luke and Rey screen time together?
Yeah, you know, It didn't seem to make the dark side of the Force that dark. I mean, Kylo Ren does seem to be still kind of moody, and, you know, he's overreacts to things and, you know, is temperamental. But you know, like there's nothing in this film that matches, you know, him, you know, murdering his own father in the previous film. So in a way, that the dark side of the Force is more neutral in a way. Like it's not as dark. Like it's called the dark side of the Force, so I guess it is.
I mean, in the previous films, even in the prequels, they really darken up the dark side of the Force. You get Anakin Skywalker killing a bunch of children.
Well, sure.
You have planets, entire planets, blown up at the push of a button. You have all sorts of things that establish pretty strongly that this is nothing to be trifled with.
Yeah, the first time you see Darth Vader, he just picks a guy up and chokes him to death. Like, that's your introduction to that character, you know. So, yeah, that's pretty clear. With Rey and with Luke, it's just this kind of, like, hey, the light side of the Force. Or, like, this, like, Luke is disillusioned with everything. Like, she just come across him at a point when he's, like, extraordinarily disillusioned.
Nick says, I loved it. I'd say that the movie definitely made me like Finn and Poe more, and I can see where people complain about the stupid stuff in it. The issue is that Star Wars has always had dumb stuff in it, so this is nothing new. I will say that some of the scenes where they attempted to do social commentary just didn't work for the benefit of any character. I did like the political commentary, though. It made sense. What do you think he's talking about there?
He's probably pointing to, like, they have this theme where they go to this kind of planet that's full of, like, it's like a giant casino kind of an area. It's a place where rich people go to hang out and do what people do at casinos, gamble or whatever. And the character of Rose is her and her sister came from low means, and she's there with Finn, and they look at everything, and she starts pointing out the kind of evils of this kind of way of life. So it's painting the rich and powerful as kind of categorically evil. There's another point at which a character played by Benicio del Toro, who's kind of a rogue kind of a character, they steal a ship, and he's with them in the ship, And he says, well, let's look at what this guy made his money on. And they go through it all, and they discover that he sells arms to the First Order. And then, of course, oh, well, that's bad. Like, he made all his money selling to the evil First Order. But then as you continue to go through his books, all of a sudden it shows up that he also sold ships and equipment to the Resistance. So that's kind of, you know, he's making his money playing both sides. You know, and this is where probably that's the kind of commentary that the listener is talking about there. Some of the other things that are in there, like animal cruelty, you know, dealing with, you know, slavery of children, things like that. So, like, they kind of put that stuff into the film as well. And maybe not in, it's kind of heavy-handed the way it's put in. And maybe it could have been dealt with in a better way for some viewers. But that's I think, the stuff that he's getting at.
William listens in Texas. He says, is there a reason why it seems like The Last Jedi disregards The Force Awakens? The one Force Awakens scene where we saw Luke was played for laughs after Luke tossed the saber. The questions about Rey's parents are answered almost as an afterthought. Those are a few examples. What he's talking about. What do you make of it, Ted?
Yeah, you know, I'd kind of set this up, and we talked about Rey's parents too. But yeah, like that moment when like the lightsaber is put into Luke's hand, you expect, you know, that he's going to maybe even say, "Well, where did you get this?" or something. And instead, he just tosses it over his shoulder like it's no big deal. Like he just could care less, and walks away. And I think that came very early in the film. And I think that lots of like kind of like the diehard Star Wars fans were waiting for that moment. It's almost like something out of like King Arthur, where like the sword and the stone, or the lady in the lake with the sword kind of a thing. And then to have like King Arthur just go, "Bech, whatever, who needs Excalibur," and walk away. It was a jarring moment. And this gets back to those two themes of, do you just have to burn down the past? Do you have to just let the past die to move forward, or do you hold on to what is loved? And some people felt that was like a poke in the eye at that moment, and that may color the rest of the way they watch the whole film.
Now, I wonder what they're trying to do there. I think you've hinted at it a little bit, and then I got a couple more questions for you. So do you think it's an explicit plan of this trilogy to say, look, we know that you love Star Wars, and we know you really loved the episodes 4 through 6, okay, the good ones, but you got to leave it behind, fans, because we're going to kill off all your favorite characters, and we're going to keep the franchise going without them, whether you like it or not?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how, like, just from like reading stuff and like hearing Rian Johnson talk about it, he didn't get directions. Like, he wasn't given a envelope full of stuff and said, okay, this is the secret plan. This is what we're going to do. We're going to completely burn down everything and start from scratch. But, you know, this is what he produced. This is the film. You only have what you have, and this is what's on the screen now. So there it is, right? In the midst of all of that, like, there's a lot of stuff that gets thrown under the bus. But another Issues Etc. guest who you guys have on all the time, Todd Peppercorn, wrote something for The Federalist, and he points out in it that he says, you know, from a Christian point of view, the movie got one thing right. Loving another person means sacrifice. That one simple point ties this modern mythology to the one true story of the God who became man in Jesus Christ so that we can be saved from sin, death, and hell. And that is in there, like in the film. So, you know, like, yes, a lot of stuff is getting trashed out, but this idea of people being willing to sacrifice to save others is still in the film. So that is something that it has in common with the original three films that's in this film as well. But yes, a lot of the cherished stuff is being kind of burnt to the ground in order to, or it seems as though, burnt to the ground in order to move forward.
With that said, you say that there are some things that a Christian viewer of this film ought to remember about good and evil, about what directs the course of human events, or we should say who directs the course of human events. What would you say there?
Yeah, I think this is really important because, like, when we watch these movies, no matter how cool the, you know, force is and how interesting all of that is, we have to remember that, you know, if you look at it and you really look at it from the lens through the lens of Christianity, you have to remember that this is, the force is kind of this made up thing that's not real, that's just bits and pieces of real religion that are actually real religions that are kind of like taken and kind of put together with this idea of the force, and it's all kind of like spit and baling twine, all just kind of rolled up and there it is. But if the force is about, if this is the way that it's gone and this is the way that it is, it's all kind of like this Eastern sort of idea of balance, of perfect balance between good and evil, light and dark, all of this kind of stuff. If that's what it is, then you have to think of and you have to remember that Christianity is not a balance between good and evil. And God is not equal parts good and equal parts evil. And God is not dispassionately using evil in order to balance, like he's not dispassionately using death to balance life or something like that. And in the end, when the last day comes, it's not going to be this perfect balance between good and evil. It's going to be the complete and total vanquishing of evil, just like what happened at the cross when Christ died. And in his death, he vanquished all evil and, you know, sin, death, the devil, hell, all of it. So that is a very big difference, that God is altogether holy and good, and evil is not a, you know, a balanced part of God or the universe. Evil is not a natural thing. It's not part of the natural order in that way.
Finally, then, there have been a lot of people ranking the films. That's kind of a popular pastime for fans to say this was the best one and this one was the worst one. Is this a acceptable continuation of the story that George Lucas started back in the 70s and has shown no sign of slowing down in the last 40 years? Is this going to eventually go down as kind of another fan favorite?
Yeah, I don't know. Like some people are saying it's a tipping point. It's like, this is it. Like, I've seen articles that say this is the death of Star Wars and The Last Jedi killed it. I don't know that that's necessarily the case. Even within the film, like in the trailer, you had like Luke Skywalker saying that there's only one truth that he knows, and that's that the Jedi should end, you know. But even like this, I talked about frustration, is that even he doesn't get that. In the end, it doesn't go the way he thinks it's going to go. Like, it isn't the end of the Jedi, and the film is very clear that it's not the end of people using the Force or the Force or any of that kind of stuff. So Rian Johnson is set apparently to make 3 movies of his own, like a whole separate Star Wars trilogy. We'll see how that goes. Like, if it does turn out in the next couple of years that people just go, this was the worst one ever, like if when the dust all completely settles, if that's the case, I don't know if he's going to make those movies. Who knows, right? Like, that's up to Disney and to the people involved in making these Star Wars films. But yeah, you're right. There's no sense that this is going to slow down at any point. So I don't think that it's the end of Star Wars. And I think, too, that... Like, I saw it once. I need to see it another time to let it all sink in and just to think about all of it as well. I can't say that I loved it. Like, it didn't have all of the things in it that I was looking for. It had some really good moments in it, but I think there were some things that kind of irritated me, and there were some things that I thought just didn't make a whole heck of a lot of sense. And I think that people have a high standard for things making sense within the context of what they're watching. Like, it, as long as it's following its own rules, then people kind of are more forgiving of some of the oddities.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of Star Wars, The Last Jedi at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. And he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thank you very much.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Hans Feeney talking about those Hallmark Christmas movies.
And we're going to have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Christians should engage the news media because of what we do so many other things for. We care about the truth.
Molly Hemingway of Fox News speaking at the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And we do not let error go uncorrected in other ways, and we should not let error go uncorrected in the news media. We should be thoughtful news consumers. We should help journalists who know very little about our faith. I mean, I hear people complain about the media, and they complain about how a story is covered. Well, write a letter to them when they err, and gently and nicely talk to them about what they got wrong.
You can listen to Molly Hemingway's presentation, Making the Case for Christians Engaging the News Media, and all of the speakers at our 2017 Making the Case conferences on an audio DVD. We'll send it to you for a $300 year-end tax-deductible donation. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Theology for Blue Collar, White Collar, and Clerical Collar. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Rocking around the Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas. It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, Sacred Music for the Christmas Season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, Sacred Music for the Christmas Season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.